Hi, I'm Ben McAdams. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I'm joined by John Dougal on the right.
Happy Halloween.
And Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Hello. And hey, listeners, somebody sent us a lengthy email that was very fun to read. So we just want to say to our listeners who reach out, who let us know that they're listening, we really appreciate it. And we're happy to have you back, Ben.
Thank you. It's great to be back. And I have to give a shout out to a friend of mine, Paul Boyden, who came up and said he heard me last time on Both Sides of the Aisle.
Well, Paul, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to say a shout out to a listener from Oregon that listens to us. I grew up in Portland. So.
Oh, yeah. Very fun.
Well, let's go ahead and dive right in. It is Halloween, and so lots of scary election news. Probably
make it in.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah.
So monster mash.
You know, the final sprint up to election day.
Yeah.
Voters have until November 5th to vote. Have your ballot has to be postmarked by the day before election
it's
day.
Coming up
so
already?
Monday, it's coming up, and that means remember you have to drop it in the mail like.
Early
in the day on Monday to have it counted.
And it's your job to make sure it's postmarked.
Right. Or take it to a drop box at county clerk's office or different places around town.
Or if you don't have time to stand in line, you can walk your mail-in ballot into any voting location and drop it off in person as well. So that is another option for folks who maybe missed the postmark or couldn't find a nearby ballot drop box, you can walk it into any polling station and drop it there too.
Or go to a vote center and vote in person.
Vote
you
in
can
person.
Do that any day up until Tuesday, November 5th.
At 8 p.m.
At 8 p.m. So get your vote in if you want your voice to be heard. So candidates are making a big sprint up until Election Day.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what the presidential candidates are doing. What are they doing to try and get every last vote to be counted?
They are scrambling to get the quote-unquote undecided, and they're really niche-focused. If you are a Kamala Harris person, you are focusing on abortion. Mm-hmm. And if you're, you know, Trump, you're pushing immigration, the economy, and you're niche focused on those issues, just trying to get those quote unquote undecided to swing your way and to vote for you.
Yeah.
And it's going to be close in some states.
It's going to be really close. I don't think we'll know on Election Day it's going to be that close. So Trump had a big rally at Madison Square Garden. This was kind of his closing message. And I guess
he could be on a beach, but he was there because that's the place to be.
Yeah.
Well, and depending, I guess, on who you ask, that rally maybe delivered the final message or maybe it backlashed. I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah. So this caught my attention because I think in a moment where Latinx voters are not, I don't want to say up for grabs, typically fall a little bit more towards Democrats, but not categorically. We know that there were quite a few Latinx voters who supported Trump, certainly in Arizona. But I would say this was a pretty compelling argument to reconsider that support, given what I would just characterize as incredibly racist, incredibly detrimental messages around immigrants, but in particular Puerto Rico, which was referred to as a floating island of trash in the ocean.
Garbage patch,
garbage patch in the
and
ocean.
You know, I lived there for a couple years, and there's no better people than Puerto Ricans. They are so hospitable and just wonderful.
So how did that land for you? And I know
did not land well.
Yeah.
Did not land. Now, granted, it would have landed worse if it was the candidate making the comment versus somebody else. But it's up to the campaign to vet who's going on the stage. Because if they're representing you, this is not the message that you want carried forward. You want to be talking about issues at the border. You want to be talking about the economy. You do not want the media focusing on distractions like this.
Yeah.
Puerto Ricans are Americans.
Yeah, I don't know if I can say it's a distraction. I mean, this seems to have been the message. This anti-immigrant, anti-Hispanic sentiment seems to have been a consistent theme through the campaign. And you're right to say they should have vetted. I think they did vet. In fact, the reports I saw, they did look at this comedian's comments and they struck the C word, but they didn't see the need to strike anything else. And so, you know, and it's not only the Puerto Rico comment that I found offensive, but, you know, so many speakers at this rally, this comedian and so many others had is laden with so much racist, many racist jokes and racist comments and offensive comments that, you know, I do think it really summed up the campaign and what we've seen over the last year in this campaign.
Yeah, I think that's right. It was a continuing, a doubling down, a tripling down, however we want to think about it, on fear, on stoking division. And I think on, a vision for the future of this country that is dark.
Well, and from my perspective, when it comes to the economy and it comes to immigration at the border, I mean, Trump, in theory, should be knocking this out of the park in terms of this election. And we talked about how close it is. similarly on various issues, you would think Kamala Harris would be knocking it out of the park, and she seems to be struggling as well.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that struck me on the rally is, I mean, this was the victory lap. This was Madison Square Garden. He's always wanted an audience of this size in his hometown, a place where he wants to feel legitimized. And what struck me, and this is something that I think Democrats and the Harris-Wallace campaign have done well at sometimes and failed at others, is making Trump the small man that he is. Yeah. Too often, I think we make him into this genius, this, you know,
the art of the deal.
Art of the deal, the larger than life figure. I even think, you know, calling him a fascist, I think makes him bigger than he is. Mm. He's not, and I'm not by any means dismissing his behaviors. I think it is very scary, but he is not a smart person, and he's not an organized person. He hasn't ran a very good campaign. And I think that Madison Square Garden rally to me showed how small he really is. He was surrounded by 18,000 people, and the best he could do was trot out Hulk Hogan to rip off his shirt and Dr. Phil. So he's got the D-listers and some two-bit racist comedian.
Yeah.
And this was the best that he could do. And it was really small. And I think, you know, I actually think we're falling into the trap again of making him bigger than he is. He's a small-minded individual, and we need to make him small, not big.
Yeah.
But when you use the word fascist, I think it causes, it may resonate with her base, but it causes a lot of other folks to go, okay, you're going overboard. They roll their eyes and folks in the middle undecided.
Yeah.
And it goes both ways. I mean,
I would agree with that. I'm not minimizing who he is and what he stands for. I think it is scary, but calling him a fascist, I think, makes him big. And I think we do better when we point out the small person that he really is.
Right. And I guess I just want to highlight, though, that when we're talking specifically about how the word fascist has re-entered the dialogue, it's because former folks that worked closely with him are characterizing his behavior as fascistic, right? So we're talking about John Kelly. We're talking about others that were in his inner circle that said he would rule like a dictator. And there were just many examples. And I agree with you, Ben, in the sense that when you hear about kind of the things that he would say, close confidants, advisors really talking about the just, it's hard for me to characterize any other way than just absolutely bonkers, the ideas that he would come up with. But to have a person who is so, I think, interested in dictatorial leadership and authoritarianism, in really, I mean, he has said ripping up the Constitution. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to understand how Utahns feel comfortable. I know I'm looking at you, John, but I know you're not comfortable with Trump, but how many Utahns that listen to this program are comfortable with a leader who's willing to do that. When I actually engage, you know, person to person with folks across the aisle from me that have very different political views, they do hold things like the Constitution dear and a sense that our democracy really matters, our leadership in the world matters. I would just say this is certainly an election on character. And I feel concerned about where we're headed.
Yeah, but I'll give an example. If I were to go out there and call Joe Biden and Kamala Harris socialists to a certain base of the Republican Party, that would resonate and totally agree with them.
Yeah.
But ask yourself, folks in the middle or, you know, in the Democratic Party, is that going to sell them on the message? Is that going to cause them to shift? No, they're going to look and go, you're outrageous. You're blown out of control. Yeah, okay. They're pushing big government programs, but that doesn't make them socialist. Yada, yada, yada. You're being hyperbolic.
Yeah, I also think we've done, honestly, a pretty poor job educating people on true government and history in this country. Mm-hmm. So when we have these kinds of conversations about...
You're saying they're all socialists.
...about the challenges of authoritarianism or the challenges that may come along with, you know, a more progressive socialist government, I don't know that people really have we haven't invested in our education system enough for people to understand really what those differences may be, right? And I guess I would just invite people to learn a little bit about authoritarianism.
Why is that? Why do you think that is? Because I agree with you. We don't spend a lot of time thinking and discussing and talking about the ramifications of various policies.
Yeah.
Why is that?
You know, let's save that for one of our holiday episodes, because I think we could go in pretty deep there.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Well, I just say in conclusion, I think small people, dictators are small people. They're not big people. It is easy and cheap to scare people, to divide. And leaders Big people, big leaders unite. They bring people together. They have those tough conversations. They find a path forward that builds consensus across the aisle. And that's leadership. And
that's leadership.
And small people learn to just push hot buttons and divide and then use authoritarianism and fear tactics to get their way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what we're seeing here.
I'll just leave this by saying your vote is your own. And no one in your family and your network needs to know how you vote, but understand that that vote is power.
So in the short time we have remaining in this segment, let's shift to the local races.
Let's just say it looks like, again, our Republican first statewide offices are certainly poised to win. There are a number of interesting races at the local level. Maybe we can dip into those in the second segment.
That sounds great. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Ben McAdams, and I'm with Shireen Gourvani and John Dougal. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shireen Gourvani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And I'm Ben McAdams in the political middle. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Well, Shireen, you gave us the lead in.
Yes.
Let's talk about local races.
All right. Well, I guess it's difficult because we're always thinking statewide here.
Yeah.
So we've got a number of course, interesting races. We've got the governor's race, which is up. We've got some interesting polling. Before we started recording, you mentioned there's an interesting feature in the most recent Des News poll where they eliminated the option for a write-in candidate. So what's going on with...
Is there a write-in candidate for governor?
There may be.
You may have heard. Yeah.
Yes. So
I don't know why the poll didn't include that option. There is a write-in candidate, Phil Lyman, who ran for the Republican in the Republican primary for governor. He was the convention nominee, but then lost resoundingly in the primary, and then pivoted to run as a write-in candidate. So you have Spencer Cox is getting dogged by Phil Lyman on the right, and then Brian King, who's the Democratic candidate, and it's been a hard-fought race.
Yeah, it certainly has. And I think that kind of pressure coming from all angles has created an interesting version of Governor Cox. So it will be interesting to see how this all plays out. And I don't know, are you watching any interesting state-level races, attorney general or
well,
other?
Well, I mean, clearly Derek Brown is a great friend of mine. I think he's going to win that just overwhelmingly, a home run on that race. And I think he'll do a good job cleaning up that office. So that's one of those I watch, you know, clearly I'm interested in who replaces me. My last day is January 5th, and so someone will come in. I anticipate Tina Cannon will be the incoming state auditor. We'll find that out next week. But she's the Republican nominee, seems to be doing well, and has the most experience of anybody in the race.
I would just say, given the amount of controversy and mismanagement that we've seen coming out of the attorney general's office.
I was going to say, where are you going with
this? There's some excellent candidates, including Michelle Quist, who is running as an independent, a very reasonably minded person. And I guess when I think about the opportunity for checks and balances in our system at the state level, I think the auditor would be an interesting place to put a Democrat in power. The attorney general would certainly be a place to sort of moderate our politics. An independent like Michelle Quist, I think, could bring a really interesting perspective to that office and in some ways depoliticize it, which I think would be good for our state. I don't know. What are you thinking about?
Well, I was also going to say it was interesting. I don't know if you saw the quote from Rudy Bautista, saying that Derek would be an excellent candidate for attorney general. So he's the Democrat nominee in that race.
Again, I'm just going to say Michelle Quist is out there.
I have broken ranks and I've endorsed Michelle Quist, who's running for attorney general. As you said, I think she's a fantastic candidate. She has a great argument about depoliticizing
that office.
The office and really making this an office that works for the people. It has become far too political, where campaign donations and fundraising seems to be an overarching part of the job where it shouldn't be. So I think Michelle has run a great campaign and I'm proud to have cast my vote for her.
Yeah. And I think we also have some interesting state Senate races where we've got independents in the mix as well. I think about the district that is where Todd Weiler sits. There's a really strong candidate, Elisa Van Langeveld, who's there.
Right.
And then we also have Monica Manuel out on the west side. Two really interesting candidates with a lot of smarts and community service, really community-minded individuals. So I think it's just an interesting time to kind of see if people are ready to step away from partisan politics in the state.
That's right. It'll be interesting to see what happens with those races.
Well,
for
I was going to say, you start to get into state school board.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what shakes out there and the future of public ed based on the outcome of this election.
Yeah,
some really interesting Salt Lake County council races, too, with some races that are going to come down to the wire, I think. Natalie Pinckney running at large, Zach Robinson running in the Sandy area.
Yeah.
Some really interesting races. So
Yeah. And then there have been also interesting races, I would say, surprisingly close off the Wasatch Front. So if I'm remembering correctly, in 2020, the Cache County County, I think their commissioners up there, races were actually pretty close. So anyway, I just would suggest that people really take a hard look at the candidates that they've got in front of them, maybe make some votes based on character.
Well, let's talk about some of the drama in the races, too, because it wouldn't be October, it wouldn't be Halloween without drama and last minute political shenanigans. So, John, tell us about the Lyman write-in controversy, because there were Phil Lyman is running as a candidate, but there is another
Phil Lyman lost in the Republican primary and is running as a write-in.
Yes.
And then there were other Lymans that jumped in the race. There's a Richard and I think it was Susan Lyman as lieutenant governor candidate jump in the race. They said because they did not like what Phil was doing in terms of tarnishing the family name. Now, my understanding is Phil sued them, or Phil's campaign sued them, and they withdrew from the race. I can't blame them.
Explain,
but all of a sudden,
why
you got a multimillion-dollar lawsuit coming against you. You know, I think there's a question of, you know, what does that mean in the future of our elections? Will somebody with deep pockets chase other candidates out of race with threats of lawsuits?
Yeah,
but so they drop out. Now, what is the key issue that's kind of important there is if you wrote in Lyman with two Lymans on the race, you don't know voter intent.
Well, three Lymans.
Lyman. It sounds like a law firm.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
So, but this is where, you know, they're trying to figure out voter intent.
Yeah.
And if you have one person and you write Ben, and there's only one Ben running as a write-in, okay, we think that's Ben McAdams.
Yeah.
But if we have three Bens in the race, all of a sudden, well, which Ben are we talking about?
Yeah.
So Phil Lyman was worried that by having other Lymans in the race, that would bleed off some of people who maybe didn't remember his first name or just wrote Lyman or something, that then it would, those votes would just be neutralized, right? It would cost him votes.
Yep.
I guess we don't know because the polling didn't include a write-in option, but it doesn't seem like it's close from, I guess, what I've seen. But
I think Governor Cox still wins the race. You know, it's clearly going to be much closer than a normal gubernatorial race. You know, Republican, I don't think, is going to get 2/3 like they normally do.
Yeah, we'll see. I guess I would say when it comes down to it, writing campaigns takes so much organization, so much education, so much voter education, even with the multiple Lyman issue, which has now been resolved. But I think to get the kind of sophistication that's needed for something at that scale, I don't see Phil Lyman's people camp.
And you have to hand write it in.
Yes,
you do. In the past, you could do stickers, but with the machines we have these days, my understanding is you can't do a sticker. So you can't, as a candidate, send out, put this sticker on your ballot. Mm-hmm. You have to write it in by hand.
Well, speaking of stickers of a different kind, let's talk about a little bit of a stamp controversy coming out of Utah County. So do you want to describe this as our Utah County representative, John?
So the story, as I read it, is that our county clerk in Utah County is tracking how politicians, or at least certain politicians, cast their ballot. You know, and he's contacted some or flagged for some. They voted by mail and didn't put a stamp on their mail-in ballot.
Which you do not have to do.
You do not have to put a stamp on there, but clearly he does not, the county clerk does not support mail-in voting, let alone having the county pay for the postage cost.
Even though it was funded, right? It was funded. There was money set aside for that.
So the issue, though, is the whole notion that says, well, wait a second. Why is the clerk keeping track of how I cast my ballot? And clearly it opens up the question, which is, and is the county clerk going a step beyond that?
Yeah.
Where ballots are now open for those officials and individuals who are looking to see politicians so-and-so voted XYZ. Yeah. Which you have a constitutional guarantee to a secret ballot, and it opens up questions of integrity in the election process. Is somebody improperly not just
tracking how you returned it,
but tracking actually how you marked your ballot?
Yeah.
So this is Utah County Clerk Aaron Davidson, and the issue is that he outed, I would say, a state senator for having returned a ballot without a stamp.
Mike McHale.
Yeah. And so. Then, well, now you did it too. On the reporting. I'm joking. But what I do think that
scandal
this,
of scandals,
scandal
right?
Scandal of scandals. But there is a little bit of an underlying thing here, which suggests, and he says, that there are safer ways or more secure ways, more certain ways to vote. And that would be the ballot drop boxes.
Ballot drop box. His preference is vote in person.
Vote in person. Now, we know
his the clerk's preference
the clerk's
is
preference.
Vote in person.
We know that Utahns prefer mail-in voting. And in fact, at high, very high rates, over 80%, if I'm not mistaken, are voting by mail or using the ballot drop box to drop their ballots. I do think by the time you hear this, if you have not put your ballot in the mail, it is a good idea to drop it at a voting location or to drop it in a drop box because we are down to the wire. But in general, for people like me who voted really early when that thing came in, you can go ahead and put that in the mail. Like I said, maybe at this point, do not. But generally, when that ballot arrives, if you're an early voter, you can also go to vote.utah.gov and it says track my ballot. So you can click on that, put in your address and your name. I did this just this week and my ballot has been received. I suggest that people do this.
Not counted.
But received.
Not counted, but received. Yeah, which is normal at this stage. Yep. It's yep. at this stage in the game.
Well, I think it's also worth noting that voting by mail is secure. The mm-hmm. incidence of fraud related associated with vote by mail is negligible.
Yes.
So these ballots are cast. It's counted. The signature verification process is very accurate.
Very accurate.
So if you want your vote to be counted, the Utah's vote by mail system is very safe and secure.
Yeah.
And you can do that.
And I'm not a fan of vote by mail, but I drop mine in the drop box. And our drop boxes have video surveillance to see who's coming up and dropping ballots in the ballot box.
Occasionally postal gets lost. So if you vote early like me, you can drop it in the mail, and if it doesn't get counted, you can go
and vote
in person. But this is a safe means. So the concern with what happened in Utah County was we have a constitutional right to ballot privacy, and that nobody can know how I voted. And what happened in Utah County...
Until you take that picture and you post it on Facebook. But
you can self-disclose, but nobody can come in and find out who I voted. It's the constitutional right to a secret ballot.
Yeah.
And what happened in Utah County was the clerk tracked a ballot and mapped it back to the voter and identified
track the envelope,
right? And tracked it back to the voter, which was the state senator. And, we don't know that this person, that the clerk opened the ballot and saw what's inside.
Correct.
But it's getting on really thin ice if you are saying, I know who this envelope belongs to.
By which it was returned.
Yeah. Did he open it to look to see how he voted?
And it opens up another question for some, which is, okay, when you register to vote, you can check a box to say, I want my voter information
private, or
withheld, but usually private. So then you get into the questions of, okay, disclosing some of this information, does that out somebody that you technically can't out?
Yeah.
We have, very well-established processes. You remember on your ballot, you can peel it back so they can see that the signature matches.
Yes.
And then they don't open the ballot at that point because once they've seen your name, they don't want to see how you voted. So then it goes into a different pile that they will then go and tabulate this.
Yeah.
So the process for ensuring a secret ballot is very well-established. And what happened in Utah County puts that into question. And that's really troubling.
We did an audit in 2017 of one county, and they weren't following their procedure. When they opened, and they were opening by hand the envelopes, but when they opened them by hand, they were improperly having the envelopes name up as ballots were opened up next to it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you as a worker or as a poll watcher could see. And when they were open, the names were supposed to be down, so you couldn't do any type of correlation. But just because we have a law about it doesn't necessarily mean various folks follow the procedures that are supposed to be in place.
Right.
Utah takes these things very seriously.
That's right.
And I think if you are voting, whether by mail, by Dropbox, or in person, don't believe what you see on social media or all the hype. Your vote will be securely and safely counted, accurately, and represented accurately. And if you're a candidate that loses, that hurts.
That hurts.
But
we've
all lost, and it stings.
Yeah.
But you have to take solace in the fact that this was the will of the voters, and it's the outcome that the people chose, and
that's right.
Is American democracy. So we just
or
have
constitutional
a,
republic
or constitutional republic.
I'll add that there's a bit of a mysterious out-of-state group that is attacking Utah Democrats with anti-transgender campaign ads. And the reason I bring this up is I would just add that this is really part and parcel of what I see from the Trump campaign kind of all the way down, which is using fear and taking a particular subset of our, actually a very targeted and marginalized group of our society, and using that to leverage into extremism. So I would just ask people to reject this kind of like hysteria, to extend grace and love to trans folks. There aren't that many of them, and they deserve our respect and love. And I would just say, whenever you see a particular person being used or a particular identity being used to stoke fear, you know that something is wrong.
But we also have that with various issues that are out there and various groups that are trying to fearmonger on different issues as well.
Yeah, this has really been kind of a tight closing argument from Republicans. And I do think that it is a real disservice and creates a more dangerous life for trans folks.
But I would say what some of the Democrats do about abortion is also fearmongering. And it's closing arguments of Kamala Harris. And it's fearmongering there from my perspective.
Wherever it's coming from, we should reject it. You know,
yes.
I have friends who are trans and they are afraid.
Yes.
And rightly so, because of some of the, hateful rhetoric and actions that are happening in society. And, you know, my son has a friend who's an immigrant, and they're also afraid. So maybe in these closing days, you can also reach out to somebody who feels marginalized and
attacked
and show them some support. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Ben McAdams. I've been joined by John Dougal and Shireen Gourbani. Thank you to our producer, Anthony Scoma. And thank you to you, our listeners. Mm-hmm.